So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Good evening and welcome to Health Writers. I'm your host, Gary Karch. Tonight we're kicking off this weekend's celebration of Medicare's 46th anniversary. Health writer Steve Blank will speak with Kay Tillo, an expert on single payer, about our nation's desperate need for a tax-based system of health insurance that covers everyone and reduces costs dramatically. Let's get started, Steve.
I'm speaking this evening with Kay Tillo. She is the coordinator of the All Unions Committee for Single Payer Healthcare, which builds union support for House Resolution 676, which is the Medicare for All bill. She lives in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to Health Writers, Kay.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Kay, let's start out by first celebrating the 46th anniversary of Medicare in this country. And then let's discuss what's wrong with the new healthcare legislation that was passed last year in the United States.
Okay. Well, we should celebrate the 46th birthday of Medicare because it's the best plan that we have in the country, and it works reasonably well for 47 or so million people, and it's the best plan that we have, and it's a single payer plan.
And the so-called Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that was passed last year, it still leaves, even when it's fully implemented, I believe it's intended, as written, to leave 23 million people uncovered and then putting them out there in the free market to fend for themselves and buy a health insurance private product through the exchange. Isn't that how that works?
Well, it puts more than 23 million into the, you know, into having to, it makes all of us, supposedly, if we can afford it, buy private profit-making health plans.
That's right.
And it does leave, I think the estimates have been 23 million without coverage, which means that we're far from covering everyone. But just as bad as that, it does not control the cost. So the health care is still beyond the means of many, many, many people, even if they have a plan. I mean, that's the disaster that's confronting us now, is that the plans that are there don't cover and still leave people unable to afford their care because of high deductibles, big copays, et cetera.
Now, a lot of people, you know, they support Obama so fervently because they're afraid that we'll get somebody worse. So they tend to think maybe that this legislation is as good as we could get. But those of us who really analyze it and know the things that you've just discussed, we realize that this is not a solution, and it's just not going to help us economically and morally. We're not covering the people who need, well, every American. Every American deserves health care. So how did we get to this? How did we get to this situation where we ended up with such a bad bill? Specifically, what role did Max Baucus, the senator from Montana, play in preparing this legislation and getting it passed the way it did?
Max Baucus is the senator from Montana, and he was the head of the Finance Committee where the bill was drafted, and specifically, his top aide at that time was a woman who had been a top executive of a health insurance plan. So very clearly, the whole process allowed for the insurance industry to work its way. And the outcome is a bill that assures that there are profits for the insurance companies and for the pharmaceutical companies, and that we still overpay in this country, and we can't cover everybody, and we're not getting health care that we could get to every person there. You know, we do have many good things in our health care. I mean, we have a high development of technology. We've got lots of good health practitioners. The problem is we don't have a system that allows that to get to all of the people who need it.
It sounds like, we put the profits of the private insurers above the needs of all people, so that only the people who can afford, I suppose, premium plans and to pay very high out-of-pocket expenses can take advantage of this great technology that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's basically the problem. You know, if you look at our health system up against that of any other industrialized country, we can see that we pay about double per capita. It's somewhere in the area of $8,000 per person. And other nations who have better outcomes in terms of longevity or infant mortality, et cetera, they average about half that. So we have to look at what are we doing wrong? Why is it that we can't get universal care? Why is it we can't afford the care? Why are we spending so much that they're talking now about cutting into Medicare and Social Security to balance the budget? All of this could be solved if we would move to a single-payer plan that would cut out the waste and the profits and allow us to be able to reach all of our people with good, medically necessary care for everyone and cut out the private insurers who eat up the money that we really need to apply to care.
Yes, that reminds me of a conversation I had here in March with Dr. Margaret Flowers, who mentioned that, I guess it was the California Nurses Association, did a study and discovered that we could cover everyone in the country with a single-payer health care plan and save $400 billion, and that's astounding. I find it hard to believe that any American who has any moral concern for the health of all of our citizens, and also just from a pragmatic perspective, looking at our budget, is concerned about, you know, all the things that we're talking about now, the deficit and the cost of health care, could reject an argument for single payer. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense at all. And, you know, I think that they were afraid during the health care reform, people like Max Baucus, we're afraid that if single payer could be discussed as a part of the health reform plan, that it would make sense to a broad spectrum of people and would say, you know, people would say this is obviously the solution. And so I think that's why, you know, Senator Baucus kept it off of the table. And, you know, as a result, we end up with a plan that doesn't work, and it will have to be reformed. We have to revisit it because we don't have our people covered, and we can't afford health care the way it's going, and we're still being gouged by the insurance industry and also by the expanding for-profit hospitals. And now, you know, in my state, Kentucky, and in many others, Medicaid is moving into the for-profit area, which is a disaster waiting to happen as they take more of the money needed for, you know, the most vulnerable people and use it to give it to the for-profit companies. You know, a company like Humana, they make all of their profit off of public money covering Medicare Advantage and other programs that are publicly funded. So we're just handing over all of our assets to companies who don't use it to any good purpose.
That's right. You know, we're collecting taxes, and we have this national treasure, and we distribute it to the wealthy and the private corporations. That's what's happening. It's the great transfer of wealth, and it has to end. But speaking of Max Baucus, let's talk about the great irony of what's going on, particularly in Libby, Montana. Here is Baucus, a senator from Montana, who is instrumental in formulating a bill that, you know, healthcare bill and passing legislation that keeps single payer out of the picture permanently. You know, I mean, that's really what this is all about. He's permanently entwining private insurers into the picture at the expense of public expenditure and equal distribution of health care. Now, the irony is there's such a horrible disaster in terms of health in Libby, Montana, that the only way to take care of people is to cover everyone, and the only way to afford that is with a Medicare for All plan for the people of Libby, Montana. So Max Baucus writes that into the healthcare legislation. Tell us what's going on in Libby, Montana.
Well, the story is that a vermiculite mine was in operation for decades in that region, in the far northwest corner of Montana, and that the products of that mine were filled with asbestos, which is deadly and causes terrible diseases and cancers, and that the people who worked in the mine, but also the people in the community, were exposed to this. And, you know, the products were used in home insulation and put on the running track at the schools and mixed into the soil for the gardens. And this is an airborne vehicle, the asbestos, that causes mesothelioma and many, many other complications for the people who get it. And indeed, hundreds and hundreds of people have died from the diseases, and many, many thousands are sickened in a region that's sparsely populated. So the story came out when the Seattle Post-Intelligencer did a series of investigative reporting and really exposed that it indeed was the mine and the company W.R. Grace that were at the bottom of this terrible sickness in the region. And as a result, you know, it became known everywhere that people were sick because of this company, and there was no way that they were losing their jobs, the mines closed, et cetera. Well, you know, Baucus, I'm sure, was under great pressure from the people of those communities to do something about this. And I think the interesting thing is that he didn't institute an exchange for them. He didn't say they had to buy it. He didn't say they had to wait 3 years to get on Medicaid. You know, he didn't say that they had to have so many credits in. He simply wrote a provision into the Affordable Care Act that allows them to be signed up into Medicare and to immediately begin to get those benefits if they're suffering from any of the effects of asbestos in the region. So, you know, I wrote an article because I thought it was extremely interesting that he wouldn't allow the nation to discuss single payer, and yet he knew that a single payer plan was really the only way that was going to get the benefits to the people of that very tiny region in northwest Montana.
That's fascinating. And, you know, it answers one of the questions that a lot of naysayers bring up about single-payer or Medicare for All. They say, oh, how could we possibly transition into this? I remember at the beginning of the debate, Obama, who formerly had championed single-payer as a senator.
As a state senator. I don't think as a national one.
You know, that's true. It was back in 2006, I suppose, the last time he mentioned it. But Obama said, we just have too much in place already. It's too hard, too difficult to dismantle it, too big of a task. But really, you wrote in an article a couple of days ago that in 1965, when we implemented Medicare for seniors, we transitioned right into it within a year with no problem.
That's true. I think they had it up and running in less than a year, probably about 10 months. So it's very, very easy to do because there's, you know, to do single payer, you just enroll everybody. You know, you reach out. You don't have to screen them for who is too sick and who has pre-existing conditions and who has this, who has that. You simply expand it so that everyone's eligible. You sign them up if they come into the emergency room or go to see a doctor. You sign them up everywhere because everyone's eligible and you get everybody into the same pool. And that allows us to, for the economy of one risk pool, to be able to get a rational system that actually can cut back on the fraud and abuse and the waste and expand the care. That's really what we want to do, is expand the care so that everybody gets what they need. You know, so much of the Affordable Care Act was based on the idea that people are getting too much care, so we've got to cut back on it. We've got to put barriers to getting care. We need to put in deductibles and copays and all of these kinds of things so that people don't overuse the system. And the reality is that we have a bigger problem with people who don't even get to use the system at all. There is more needed care that people don't get than there is a problem with the abuse. Most people don't want more care than they need. As a matter of fact, hardly anyone does.
I think that's true.
You know, we have to change. That's an insurance company priority that says people are overusing and abusing, and that's what we have to stop. The reality is people are not getting the care that they need, and we need to open those doors, and that will get people in for preventive care and all kinds of care that can end so much of the suffering.
I agree with you. In fact, when you talk about opening doors, I'm reminded of a conversation I had last year with a friend of mine. We were discussing this, and it's so important that everyone has access to prevent the spread of disease. If we all have access to health care, even undocumented workers, you know, they're working with our food, they're working in restaurants, they're working for farmers. If they're sick, you know, they're so afraid because of our terrible immigration laws of being deported, and they have no health insurance, and they have no money to spare. So they're so afraid and unable to obtain health care that if they're ill, they can be incubators for disease. We all can be. Everyone needs access to health care so that we can stop the spread of disease early.
You're absolutely right. I mean, there's a real public health need for everyone to be covered, absolutely every person, and not to be afraid to go and get that help. And that will make us all healthier people and a healthier nation. And that's really why in Congressman John Conyers' H.R. 676 bill, he was asked, he says, he was told by others, oh, you should exclude, you know, the undocumented, that this will never pass without this. And Congressman Conyers says, you know, that's immigration law. The job of this bill is to make us healthy and to make sure that we have health care to extend to everyone, and we don't want to exclude anyone. And the best systems don't. They say that all of the people should have a right to get the health care that they need. And that means absolutely everyone, everybody in, nobody out.
Yeah, and imagine being, you know, one big network of doctors where you could be anywhere in the country and just choose to see any doctor you want because we're all in the same network.
That would be wonderful. We have no freedom of choice now because, you know, we're all wrapped up into health plans that to make more money, they limit the ability to choose our own physicians. And so we don't have it now. So we will really be free.
I know. They call it choice. That's the great Orwellian irony is, you know, they're saying, well, we need to preserve choice, so we have to keep the government out of health care. But by what kind of a choice is it? You know, we have to spend more money for less. And, you know, the whole idea on their end is not to cover us and not to provide the services that we're paying for. That's how they make money.
They certainly do. That's why they have that strange language, the medical loss ratio. And that's the money that actually goes to pay for benefits. But in insurance company brains, that's what we're losing because they want it all to go into the profit. You know, in our state of Kentucky, the commissioner of insurance has asked for a waiver so that we can maintain a 65% medical loss ratio, which is that's where it is now. And Of course, there's some, you know, change under the national law, and they want to maintain 35% for insurance company waste and profit.
And that's 35% that doesn't go toward helping people at all.
That's right. Absolutely right. And that really is our problem, you know. 31% in the studies that have been done, particularly by Himmelstein and wool handlers, say that 31% of what's in our system does not go to care at all, but goes into these administrative waste and the profits, and that is caused by the private insurance industry. And that really is the difference between our system and the rest of the industrial world, is that we allow it to be totally dominated by the private insurance industry, and they do not. They don't allow the private insurance industry to be a part of the basic national health plan.
Well, before you go, I want to talk a little bit about strategy, and I know that I'm very happy that they're making progress in Vermont on getting single payer for their state. I don't think they're really as close as most people think, but there's some indication that Vermont could become a state that is covered by where everyone is covered by sort of a Medicare for all plan. But I'm concerned that that is not really the approach that we need. Some people think that if we can get it passed in Vermont, we can duplicate what happened in Canada and where it spread from province to province. But I think the first step toward single-payer health care occurred in the United States when we passed the Medicare bill in 1965. What's your take on a strategy for achieving Medicare for All in the U.S.?
Well, I think that we have to work on the national plan. And while I respect the people who work at the state level because they're working to build the movement, I don't think it's possible to implement full single payer with all of the savings and all the efficiency on a state level. We have too many laws in place that won't allow that. In addition, there's ERISA, you know. I would be opposed to breaking up Medicare and doling out the money to the states who want to experiment with it. I think that's a really dangerous thing to do, and that's a part of what the Vermont people are proposing, is that they get the Medicare money for their state. So I think that, you know, people work in the states, they should work to build the understanding of single payer, but that we should concentrate our effort on the national movement. It really is it's a national problem, and it's something that we have to do nationally. You know, I'm a union person. We're just totally familiar with how state by state they play us against each other. They go after workers' compensation. They say our taxes are too high in this state because so all the other states are getting the jobs, so they come after changing the law in one state, and then they get it lowered there, and then they go after another state. I think we have to look at a national plan. I mean, we don't want states played against each other on the basis of the taxes or whatever else, and it just solves a whole bunch of problems. I mean, I think that Don McCann of PNHP, that's the physicians organization, says that the laws that you would have to change on a federal basis to allow implementation of single payer on a state level are just as complicated and complex as it would be to pass a whole national single payer plan. So I think that we should look at what we can do. It seems to me on a national level, we have a good start. I think we have majority opinion. I think majority opinion for decades now has said that people believe that the government should be responsible for health care, that they think everyone should get it, and that it should be publicly funded. And that means that we have the people on our side. So our problem isn't so much to persuade people as to help them understand how and why it works and then help them to be active so we can push it. Because the barrier is in Washington, and the barrier is with the corporate power that dominates our political system.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation. But wow, what an excellent analysis you just offered. I think you're absolutely right. I agree that we should go with a national movement for single payer. I think that the state plan, state by state plan, is an invitation to a divide and conquer strategy for the privatizers. Very well said. And one more thing I'd like to add, maybe you can comment on it, is even if we did try a state-by-state plan, it would really only be effective as a model if we went with a large state like California. In Vermont, the pool just isn't large enough to show how dramatic the savings can be when everyone is in one pool. Don't you agree?
Well, I don't think that they'll be able to implement in order to show. That's a part of the problem. And it seems to me that on a policy level, it's been proven all over the world
that's true.
That it's effective and that it works and that you really can cover everyone for less money. And it seems to me that there's not a necessity to show that we can do it in a state in order to be able to do it on a national basis.
We're going to leave it there. Well said, Kay Tillo. Thanks so much for being our guest this week on Health Writers.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve. We just heard from single-payer expert Kay Tillo about the need for a Medicare for All plan in this country. And this program has been discussing healthcare disparities and the effects they have on individuals and society as a whole for years. We already know the United States ranks badly compared to other industrialized countries regarding markers of all types concerning healthcare access, outcomes, and cost. We know that major corporations are making billions of dollars in record profits while not paying taxes, and in fact have been receiving tax rebates. We know that 29 companies have more cash on hand than the United States Treasury. We know that such claims are not limited to corporations. We know that 400 Americans have more wealth than half of all Americans combined. We know that we spend more of our public monies on the military and perpetual wars than any other nation on earth. And finally, we know that a Medicare for All program will save this country $400 billion a year while covering everyone. So why aren't we more outraged? While Wisconsin's attention is diverted to recall elections, redistricting, and other political shenanigans, we mustn't lose focus on the gargantuan effort to save Medicare. The only way to real fiscal responsibility and healthcare equity is the expansion of Medicare into a truly universal healthcare delivery system embodied in the model of set by Representative John Conyers' H.R. 676. Medicare's average 3% administrative costs greatly outshine the private industry costs of 25% or more. Phone your legislators, even if you think they're already on your side. Call those legislators responsible for this looming federal catastrophe, even if you're not one of their constituents. As citizens of this country, we are all their constituents. And call that buffoon responsible for this latest onslaught, our own homegrown atrocity, Representative Paul Ryan. His slash-and-burn budget proposal is the reason the whole country is in such a dither. This is health writer Gary Karch. When I was in grade school, I never imagined this would be the state of my country in the year 2011, and I don't believe it's the country you thought it would be as well. We all know this. Now act. That does it for tonight's program.